welcome to the Ohm Show. My name is Chris Albrecht, and I'm sitting here with Ohm, and we're going to have a fun discussion just about big technology trends that are going on in the world. How are you doing this morning, Ohm?
I'm well, Chris. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has.
And I thought it would be great to have you introduce me one more time, because back in the day, you would do it all the time, and I miss that part of our conversations.
Oh, I know. It's good to talk with you. And today, we're going to be talking about Facebook. Facebook has gotten a lot of attention lately, and not all of it great. Let me just start. Are you still on Facebook?
I'm not, actually. I got off Facebook on September 23rd, 2017. And, you know, it was not like a real that I was angry at them being, you know, biased or fake news or anything. My issues with Facebook were that I was looking at the world through the eyes of other people, and I was getting jealous of what other people were doing. And I know I'm not that person. So I decided that I needed to go back to my roots and just start to like center myself and get away from the overload of stimuli that was coming from Facebook. And frankly, it's been great. Like I don't know people's birthdays anymore or miss the baby photos. But I also miss a lot of nonsense and political debates, which is kind of nice to not be involved in those things.
Yeah. Do you, because I'm off it now as well. I haven't deleted my account because it seems like it's good for other things that I may not know about yet, but I certainly don't go on there as much. When do you think it kind of turned? Like, because it seems to me that it just stopped being fun to go on.
I think a lot of negative attention is being focused on the company right now and what has happened in recent times. But, you know, this has been a long time coming. In a sense, you know, there is only so much space in the feed and there is only so many hours in a day. So if you have to make money as a company and you have to keep your audience engaged, you're going to have to do a lot of things to kind of, you know, compromise people's attention and keep it. And I think for me personally, the sheer volume of information and how they were managing the feed was the turning point. And I think a lot of people have started to notice that the feed has lost some of its fidelity and some of its you know, purity of the socialness of it. And, you know, whether it was too much fake news, too many news stories, too much video, too much this, and it started to feel like a place which was, you know, as emotionally available as, let's say, MySpace back in the day.
Yeah, to every season, turn, right? Like everything old is new again. But I have kind of felt the same way. And it was interesting. I was reading a book on parenting called The Enlightened Family or something like that. And it really crystallized something for me because they were, you know, when I first got on Facebook, it was great. I feel like there you can kind of chart it, right? Like, oh, I'm reconnecting with all these old people that I haven't seen in a while. And then you kind of realize, well, there's a reason I didn't connect with them. And it's not out of like animosity, but just people drift apart. And then I had a kid, and so I started posting all these baby photos, and there was a reason to take pictures and all this stuff. But in this book, she was talking about how Facebook becomes this trophy room, and the only thing people post are the good things. And so they don't ever show, like, their kid throwing a tantrum or, you know, somebody, you know, something, a failure. It seems like it's really rare. So I think to your point, it becomes this sort of jealousy machine.
Yeah, I think, you know, what it is essentially a reflection of, what we really are, right? You know, as a society, we only want to show the good side of our life, you know, the glamorous life. And again, the feelings I was experiencing were of negativeness because of that. You know, like all the people showing all the beautiful things in their life. And I just like, you know, I'm struggling like any other person. It's like, I have down days, you know, you know, I have, you know, emotional challenges like anybody else, you know, and here is it, like, how is it that these people have no problems and they have all these, you know, beautiful vacations and, you know, lovely homes and near perfect kids. And I know that they're not, like, and so, and I suddenly started to look at my life from the lens of other people, right? Like, I think that is where, you know, a lot of people are finding that social media is not really something you can, you know, rely on. But let's just take a step back, right? Like, we are a society that loved reality TV.
Yeah.
And social media is highly edited version of that reality TV. We pick and choose what we want to show and share with people. Remember, I wrote a piece a long time ago. I can't remember, like 2011. I want to star in a movie called Me.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what we are doing. And now everybody is like making their movies and they're only showing the best clips, you know, so that not the reality. And I think that's what is going on right now. And I think that's why the purity of a social experience is gone. I think people are not authentic. And I think Facebook doesn't quite understand that. They keep talking about, you know, removing certain things from their feed and doing all these experiments. But what they don't understand is that they can't force authenticity on people now that people have been trained to show only the best bits of their life.
Right. You can't put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's childish of them to think that they can actually make it, you know, go away. It's not going to be like that. The ugly side reared up, you know, during the elections when the politics and the polarization in society got intensified and it was reflected into people's feeds and people suddenly woke up and just say, oh my God, I don't want to deal with this nonsense. I don't want to deal with such anger. I don't even know who these people are and how they react. And, you know, you started to see the reality of people in a political discourse, right? Like, people are very passionate about politics and sports. And in those discourses, all sense of civility goes to hell. Have you been to a bar at night where you're talking politics or, you know, Yankees and Red Sox? It's always going to devolve into a fist fight. Yeah. I mean, Facebook is exactly the same thing.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that sparked this conversation was the Wired piece on the 2 years in hell. And the photo of Mark of a battered Mark Zuckerberg. How do you think? I know your kind of opinions on him, I feel like since I've known you, have sort of ebbed and flowed. Like, there are times when you've been sort of, you know, casting not aspersions, but just sort of questioning how he's done, and then other times where you think that he's done really smart things. How do you think now that he's been in this role for this amount of time? How do you think he's navigating this?
So those are not mutually exclusive things, right? Like, I can admire his business skills and yet be challenged by his attitude towards, you know, coming to solve a problem or looking at a problem. I think when I think about, first, let's talk about, you know, Mark. I think he's a remarkable businessman. I think from where he was when I first wrote about Facebook, which is like 2004 time frame, to where he is now, it's a night and day difference. He's probably one of the most accomplished business people in our modern society.
Yeah.
Right. Secondly, I also feel as a person, he has learned the most, evolved the most, and probably is one of the better CEOs in Silicon Valley. Like, way better than, you know, the founders of Google or, you know, any other founder, because he has been consistent in growing his capabilities. That means growing his capabilities to deal with not only, you know, angry developers from there, which was like in 2007, 2008 timeframe, all the way to, you know, dealing with angry business people and gaming companies and partners, to now dealing with angry governments and you know, civic authorities. So as a person and as a business person and as a professional, he's definitely evolved from, you know, the teenager he was when I first met him. Now, that's also at the same time, he's also taken a, literally an idea which was all about basically checking out cute people and rating them into, you know, the glue which connects 2 billion plus people in the planet. So, you know, how do you do that? You do that by doing a lot of crazy things, a lot of nefarious things, a lot of things which are, I think, immoral and unethical, right? But that is the price you pay for growth. And the growth, you know, is where the story is. The growth at any cost, engagement at any cost are two mantras of Facebook, which are not going to go away. So a lot of, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying there are certain things they do which are on the spectrum of being amoral. And I think, you know, they don't understand that what they're doing is amoral. It just is. They're doing it because they feel that's what they have to do in order to be successful in the marketplace.
It's almost like it's being driven by a cold algorithm, ironically.
No, but like, think about it this way, right? Like, if you are Facebook, what is the biggest asset you have? The number of people on the planet, right? And you're valued by growing that, the number of people on the planet, because the stock market looks at you and just say they're still growing and they're still in, people are still engaged, aka daily active use, the minutes spent on the service is going up. And so they can keep monetizing the attention and make money, right? Because of that, they get the valuation they have. I don't know, the share is like $170 or something like that today. The reason their share value is at that high price is because people think that they can keep growing, keep the attention intact, and they can, you know, keep making money and keep sucking money away from other media companies. However, you're starting to see is that there is a little bit of a pushback from actual users who are just saying, wait, I don't want this anymore. I mean, I've had enough of McDonald's, or I've had enough of cigarettes for like a lifetime. I'm just going to quit. That's the analogy to think about, right? Like, I just don't want it anymore. And I think they have to face that challenge. Some of us may be at the very leading edge of that, you know, quitting Facebook movement, but eventually they have to worry about the reality of the movement, you know, going and, you know, taking like a much more momentum. Anyway, going back to the idea, this is all driven by their need to grow. Need to grow is because they have to keep the stock price high. Because they have the stock price high, they can hire a lot of smart people, keep them intact, keep the whole enterprise going. So this is like, they got tiger by the tail. It's no different than, you know, Microsoft in the past or Google in the past. It's exactly the same thing. You want talent, you need to have really, you know, good stock, good options, a lot of money, and you have to show growth. You need to create excitement for people. And, you know, a lot of that is market driven too. Like, you know, much as we like to deny it, but, you know, any enterprise which is going to go public will have to appease the gods of growth in Wall Street.
Yeah, I think you hit something on the head, which I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is two things can be true at the same time. And it seems like all manner of that is sort of lost in the engagements on Facebook. You know, everything becomes either or, neither nor, and you're either on this side or you're not on this side. And people just have this inability to hold two competing thoughts at the same time or realize that they can both be true at the same time.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you think about it, that's true of everything in society right now, right? Like, we are so polarized. And because I think the communication we have with each other is essentially not the way we used to communicate with each other. We had a very civic discourse. And now increasingly, if we are going to communicate with each other through Twitter or Facebook or any other social media, you know, a lot of the civility goes out of the window. And so it becomes a very polarized conversation. It's like, I love Yankees and I love Red Sox and I love this and I love that. And like, wait, why can't you just love one thing and not hate the other? Why is like, why does love have to be, you know, like it responded with hate, right? It's like, I think the binary nature of conversations on the social media is actually spilling over into the society, or I don't know, maybe it is the society spilling over into social media, because they're no different. They're exactly the same thing. Facebook is reflection of our reality. Same is Twitter. We try and deny this, but it really is like, you know, we would not be talking about things we talk about online if we were not thinking about them in real life.
So you're an old school journalist. Your icon on Gig
Ohm. Was.
No, you. I think you once told me that you never give it up. Like you've always got it in you. And you know your old icon used to be the fedora press hat and the cigar. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot is, and in that Wired article was the idea of hierarchy and democratization of content. And, you know, you come from a background of magazines and newspapers, right? Where there, somebody goes through and decides, hey, this story is important. We're going to put it in a larger font, or we're going to give it more space. So you could just visually see like, oh, as a reader, I know this is something I should pay attention to. And in Facebook and on Twitter, everything is the same size, in the same font, in the same box. And there is no, you know, ideally it's this democratization of content, but it also sort of lessens the value of the expert. And I'm just wondering if you have any, as you've been in media and been someone who decides what's important, and then a participant in Facebook where those gatekeepers are gone, how do you see that as any kind of role in how you react or interact with Facebook?
I don't know how to answer that question, except you and I talked about this way back when, I think it's 2008, 2009, maybe 2008, right before F8, you, me, and Liz were sitting in the office and talking about Facebook. And one of the things we talked about was Facebook as a single point of failure for the internet, because we were all using Facebook Connect and we want to log in. And you know, I often think about that conversation today, and it's like, wow, it was a single point of failure for the internet, except it turned out to be not as much a failure of the actual technology, but it was the failure of application of technology, right? Like we forgot like what it will do to everything else. Like no one thought for a minute, whether it was the media companies, whether it was all of us who used Facebook, or the developers, what will be the long-term impact? I think the long-term impact was that of, you know, like everybody wanted quick growth and, you know, quick fix to read stuff and quick. And I think you have to pay the price sooner or later. And the price we've paid is by throwing out the old idea of an editorial front page, or the idea of a headline. All of that is gone now. Like, you know, we need to kind of supersede it with something else. It cannot be the old, you know, two-dimensional idea of a front page and an editor. It is not that, right? It's like those things are gone. I think, I don't know why media people who complain about it are still, you know, holding on to the past. You know, we've moved on. I think in 10 years from now, I can tell you not many people will be reading, you know, text news. They will be consuming news in a whole different format. And because that's how industry changes, right? And I think we cannot forget that. It's like really bothers me about, you know, the media industry is that they always blame Facebook or Twitter or other people for their problems. No one did any thinking on their own part. They just wanted the free traffic from Facebook, right? Essentially, if BuzzFeed is having trouble or Mike is having trouble with their numbers, you know, hey, you made this bed, you sleep in it. You knew exactly who were you were partnering with. Facebook has screwed over every single partner it's worked with in its entire history, every single one of them. And so why would you think they would not do that to you? Facebook is only going to look out for their own growth, their own engagement and their own numbers. That's the reality. That's capitalism 101. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of the media industry has forgotten that. So now all our energy has to be focused on what is the new way of presenting information and creating this, you know, value proposition and editorial proposition, which tells people that this information is of higher value versus others. It's not through the tick marks and, you know, answering stupid polls on Facebook feed like the way Facebook was trying to do. That's not the answer. You know, what is the answer? I don't know. I have a few theories, but I'm not ready to, you know, put them out there just yet.
Yeah, you know, it's I think it's interesting because it's what I feel like Facebook and Twitter have become are just sort of pylons, right? Like if there's any kind of news, it gets back to, you know, you used to talk about all the time is the signal to noise. And there's just noise on there. And a lot of it is just there's something bad or good that happens. And then because you're friends with like-minded people, it just gets bounced around and everybody piles on with a joke or a meme or something. And it just becomes like, ugh, I'm just exhausted.
Yeah. I think, you know, I want to ask you, now you're a parent, you put so many photos and moments of your child's life on Facebook. Like, what's the value to you? Like, where is the value? Do you still think about that? Where, you know, can you get those photos back? Can you do anything with the stuff you wrote? What's your recourse as a father?
It's funny, and it's I've done a lot of thinking about that because, you know, at first, you know, years ago when my son was born, it was like, oh, look at this cute face. It's amazing, and you should take a look at it. It's just kind of fun and funny. And then I started falling into that trap of feeling like, well, is this only a trophy room for me to show you all the good things that my kid is doing? So then I remember making a point of like putting a picture of him getting fillings at the dentist to show like, you know what, I screwed up and gave my kid too much sugar. And now he's got to have, you know, a drill put in his mouth. So not everything is great in the Albrecht household. And then, you know, part of it is just I love taking pictures. And I think if something's cool, it's a place for me to just not have it just sit in a box somewhere. But I've put less and less up there because I just, you know, what am I advancing when I do that? What am I trying to say? I mean, you know, not everything has to be heavy, but like, you know, who cares if I go down to the water and he found driftwood? It doesn't matter. And, you know, maybe that's just a symptom of something bigger just in terms of being exhausted with all of it, right? Or it's just a like sort of an overreaction to not wanting to be the guy who only puts good things online. Or, you know, it just becomes, I get mired in these thoughts. I'm like, am I just virtue signaling? Do I want you guys to see how I'm thinking the right way on this particular topic? So I've actually scaled back quite a bit in terms of, you know, photos that I post of my son. And I think it's also just a matter of like, oh, I've done it for a long time and the thought has just decayed. It's just not fun to do anymore.
I think there is a lot of, you know what they say, too much is just too much.
Yeah.
And I think that's what has happened is that people just have put so much on social media that it's become just noise. And you're seeing this in Twitter right now. Twitter is seeing, you know, a resurgence of sorts and people are more actively engaged in the service, but it's also noise. It's not engagement. It's just a lot of noise.
It is.
And you know, I think this is the same thing happening on Instagram right now. I used to have meaningful conversations with a lot of people on Instagram, and I barely get, you know, 10% of my total audience actually even gets to see my photos because the stream is being so heavily manipulated by Instagram and Facebook that you don't really have much, you know, like control over like what you're seeing. And when you see something, you don't know if you like it or you don't like. I mean, it just is, it's like a pretty heavily, you know, editorialized operation. It just is not very good.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take very good inputs from us as humans, at least for now.
So let's before we devolve too much into grumpy old men sitting on our
I'm not being grumpy. I'm looking at what's next. I think why are we talking about Facebook today is because I think it's been in the news. I look at, you know, this is an opportunity. I'm not being grumpy. I just think I want this to evolve into something better.
So what do you think they should do? What's a good path, do you think, for them?
You know, it's just the same thing. You know, Microsoft could not overcome being what it was, an enterprise, you know, desktop software company. You know, now they have a cloud business, but essentially they're selling what they were selling as a desktop, right?
Yeah.
Google is going to struggle to overcome its roots of being a search business. And, you know, for all intensive purposes, you know, Facebook over the next 5-10 years is going to make a lot of money monetizing what it has right now. But it will have a tough time overcoming its reality. Its DNA is that of a social network. It's a social network which is built on the idea of big, not on better. It's not, you know, nothing about Facebook is about quality or being better. It's all about being bigger and growing and more engagement. It's got, those are their values. And sometimes those values are good. Sometimes those values are amoral. And so there is going to be somebody else who's going to come out and make something else to figure out ways for us to enjoy each other's company. I think, and it's not you and I who will come up with this answer. I think it's the post-millennial crowd, which has grown up with, you know, the idea of constant interactions, you know, on Snapchat and stories and this and that. They're the ones who are going to figure out what comes next. And I'm actually pretty excited. Like, I just think we are in that, you know, social media decay phase, and then something new is going to come.
Do you think that like a 1,000 things will bloom? Do you think there will be another Facebook? By that, I mean like a big network that everyone is connected to, or do you think people are just going to find their own, you know, their own niches or their own tribes elsewhere?
You know, there is an idea around which is becoming more and more popular, which is people are establishing, you know, groups on messaging apps like Telegram and WhatsApp and whatnot. And these groups are smaller. Some are really, really big. They're intention-based. They're interest-based. You know, they are relationship-based. And they are much tighter. They have, you know, there is a lot of value in those groups. You know, what they don't have is the idea, these are all my friends. You know, you can't have 5,000 friends in life. I'm happy to have 5.
Yeah.
Believe me,
yeah.
5 great friends are worth their weight in gold, not 5,000.
Yeah.
I'm happy I have 5. I pray and thank the Lord every day that I have 5 friends who will do anything for me.
Yeah. No, everybody, yes. And that is actually a great way to wrap this up. But before we go, I want to get, you're a big photographer. Tell me, what have you been shooting lately? What's caught your photographer's eye?
So 2018 is the year of one camera, one lens plan.
I like that.
And so I'm going to make as many long exposures in the backyard, like in San Francisco Bay Area, and not travel as much for making my kind of photography. So I'm really excited about that.
What kind of lens are you using?
I use a 50mm.
Okay.
APO or F2 APO Summicron, a Leica, on my Leica SL.
Yeah.
And that's my main camera now. And I have a Konica Mini, big mini, which is like my everyday carry on the film. And I kind of use that for like portraits and daily moments. And it's just like black and white film and that camera. And I use that. And between those two, I think I'm set for now.
Awesome. Well, if people want to see your photography, they can find you online right at ohm.co. Is that the best place?
Yeah, that's where I put all my photos, all my blog, everything there. And then I'm on Instagram also at ohm and Twitter at ohm.
Awesome. All right,
brother.
Till next time, have a good week.
You too. Have a great weekend.